This is Warbird Radio.
Welcome back to Warbird Radio. It's Matt Jolly. We're still recording these episodes at the National Warbird Operators Conference here in, well, in Chile, Virginia Beach. It's our 17th season of being on, and it's just a real privilege to be here. We had Christian Scheich on from EAA Warbirds. We're going to have some CAF folks on a little bit later. But sitting down with me right now is Darren Pleasants, who is no stranger to Warbirds. Darren, welcome back. You came on last year. You were the president of AOPA. Some unusual stuff has happened. I think we all read the press release just the other day as we're recording this. It happened, I think, 2 days ago, where AOPA released a message saying that you were on the way out. They were going to use you in a transitional period to help find a new president who lives in Frederick, or who is willing to live in Frederick, Maryland. I think it kind of took us all by shock because, we all know you. Yep. You're the guy that's on the ground and is as an air show announcer who does shows all over the world. You're the only AOPA president that I have seen out and about in years who's actually on the ground talking to people. So. Yep. You know, thanks for all you did for the last year, because it was great seeing you out there and getting to know you.
Matt, thank you, and thank you for having me on here. And as you can imagine, there's
I'm surprised you're coming on. I'll be completely honest. I was surprised you were.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that I I want to kind of walk the right line here. But I would say that it's been an amazing last year for me personally, and I did invest an enormous amount of my time on the road for all the obvious reasons. It's a membership organization, and talking to members and understanding what members care about. And AOPA depends immensely on donors as well. We've got many incredibly generous donors who help AOPA do what it does. And so seeing them matters as well. So for sure, I invested time doing that. And then I did spend a lot of time in Frederick too. The job requires both. You got to be in Frederick and you got to be on the road, in my humble opinion. And so I own a house in Frederick, have a car in Frederick, spend a lot of time in Frederick. Most of my time in Frederick or out seeing members. As was in the press release, I do also have a place in Oregon. My wife lives there. We're happily married. She runs a horse farm that we've got, and I would go back and see her every several weeks to swoop through or for a weekend. And so,
The story with 90% of the executives in America that have multiple residents and that live, and certainly your membership understands that. Here's something I want to bring up, and I think this is important. As we look at this critical, and it is absolutely critical, AOPA and the work that you do as our voice on the Hill. I mean, it's you guys are really at the forefront of this. I just went through and I was looking at the situation that's unfolded, and I thought, you know, I wonder what that looks like if you're going through this much change. And maybe you can't comment on this, but if the organization is really trying to put this much effort into having someone who is fully committed to being up there and available on the Hill 24/7 on premises, are they also interested in looking like the other, I don't know, 75% of the membership, I would assume? The reason I bring this up, if you just look at the board, Citations, TBMs, PC-12s, Vision Jets, Barons, all of these airplanes that make up what a lot of the board members fly and operate, these are complex airplanes. These are airplanes that I would venture to think the vast majority of general aviation owners, aircraft owners and operators and pilots have never touched. Is there a chance that they're going to, is this a reshaping of AOPA that we're seeing, in your opinion? I mean, I don't know what we're getting into. Are they changing? Are they going to have folks that fly the Cessna 150, and we all know Charlie Lynch, who is a voracious Warbird pilot, great guy, flown a lot of air shows with Charlie, but, you know, he's also was a senior executive with NetJets for 30 years. Nothing against that. That's a huge part of what AOPA does, but if we're really representing the average aircraft owner and pilot of America, is this a time of change at AOPA?
I mean, I don't think so, and I guess we'll see where things go going forward. For sure, that's been a big part of my focus, is to make sure that what AOPA stands for is representing the full spectrum of the members. And there are people with turbine engines, and I'm not against turbine. I have a Meridian that I've flown for years when I commuted down, but I also have a little Sea Ray Rotax-powered airplane, and I've got partnerships in several airplanes, because I think that's the beauty of general aviation. It's so diverse. And so I don't want to be come across as I'm anti-jet or anti-turbine, but your point's 100% right that the majority of AOPA members are not that, right? They're not going to be touching those kinds of aircraft. And so to me, AOPA needs to be the organization that represents all of those individuals across the spectrum. And I think that's been a reputation for a long time, that AOPA has been become kind of less in touch with that broader grassroots part of aviation. So that's been a big part of my journey here, is to try to help change that perception.
Well, and if you look at social media, and again, unbiased on this, as I can be as a journalist, just speaking from what I've experienced, if you read a lot of the stuff that comes out, that has come out since this was all announced, there seems to be a groundswell of people who would support you in that statement and say, you know, Darren's the only guy we've ever seen out, or he's, you know, I remember him when he was flying aerobatics, or when he was flying warbirds, or whatever it is. To me, you walked that line. You were the guy that understood the complex role of business aviation and all that that's involved, and then also didn't forget with who brought you to the dance.
Yep.
And I think that was so critical.
I think that's exactly right.
Resonated with.
Yeah, and I think AOPA is critical on the Hill, as you mentioned. This role that I have been in does spend some of its time on Capitol Hill, but there's a team, a government relations team. They're the ones who do the heavy lifting, right? They're the 24/7 really on the ground making stuff happen. And then this role, the CEO role, of course, leans in where needed, but that's not a 60-hour a week or 70 or 80-hour a week job. That's when needed and in important roles. But then it is to do all these other things. It's to work with the staff in Frederick. It's to be out on the front lines talking to members. It's to be talking to donors. It's talking to the partners. It's so important that AOPA plus NBAA plus GAMA, you know, plus EAA. I spend a lot of time with the leaders of those organizations navigating the various challenges that GA faces. So there's a lot to this role. I mean, that's what's interesting about it.
Absolutely. Congressman Sam Graves spoke this morning. We all heard this discussion about ADS-B and how this knee-jerk reaction, this emotional legislation, as he put it, could be on the plate where we have to have not only ADS-B out, but also now ADS-B in. This is going to be a crucial moment for AOPA and EAA, who has really led the charge and a lot of the grassroots efforts on this, and you guys have sort of piggybacked onto this, and it together, I felt like we had real representation in Washington. But this is a vital moment where we say, look, we're because the argument at hand is not so much that ADS-B, it's what they're using it for, it's what these private companies are using it for, and the government's very quick to say, well, no, we can't use it for that, but there's nothing stopping these private companies from using it. Like you would have a traffic ticket photograph, car poked on the side and it gives you the speeding ticket. They're doing the same with ADS-B, where they're tracking your information and now they're sending you a bill for landing at a public use airport.
And that to me was the big reason why AOPA has been so against that practice, is because it is taking a technology that is really instrumental in driving improved safety. And we all want better safety, right? There's no one stronger and more supportive of efforts to drive safety levels up and accident rates down than AOPA. And we're doing it because the safer we get, the more public support there is for general aviation. And ADS-B is right at the center of doing that well. So anything that gets in the way of people adopting that technology concerns us. And so that's why, the fee thing is, yes, it absolutely is easier to collect fees using ADS-B. There's no doubt there's an efficiency measure, but there's perhaps an unintended consequence of having people not adopting it. That's just bad, in our view, for the industry. So I think you mentioned there's so many challenges right now, and I think we're at a critical part in time or moment in time in aviation where you've got not just the ADS-B topic you just mentioned, but you've got things like the integration of unmanned aircraft, this whole Part 108 BVLOS, that we have to work on that together. We can't say no. I mean, unmanned aircraft will become part of the national airspace system. And so the real question is, how do you do that safely and how do you do that in a way where both can coexist? And they absolutely can both coexist. And there's a lot of things that will happen with that, they're good. You'd search and rescue and agriculture and forestry and delivery of whether it's a burrito or something. There's just so many things that will happen that unmanned aircraft will enable. And that's just one. And we could go on and on about the challenges that we have to navigate. And I think an organization like AOPA, it's critical that organization is as strong and focused on helping navigate that in partnership. Like you said, EAA and these others, we are absolutely better together. And so that's, it's an unfortunate moment in time, at least right now for me, just because I am so convinced of the role and the importance of AOPA. But, you know, and you mentioned Charlie Lynch.
Well, I've heard that. Let me just say this real quick before you jump into. You have said, and I have heard nothing but positivity in these hallways about AOPA and just how critical it is. We had a long discussion about Mosaic. We had a long discussion about what the FAA's new look and feel is going to be like, all of that. And who has been at the leading forefront of this is AOPA.
Yeah.
And that's it. We need a strong organization up in Washington.
We do. That's why, as there's some of the drama out there this week, I really do want to amplify how important AOPA is. It's a critical organization. I would love to have people continue to support it. I understand the anger and the animosity they've got right now and the frustration. But, you know, let's not lose sight of the fact that the organization itself is a critically important one in the industry. We all need AOPA to be successful, in my view. And so that's, you know, that I absolutely believe that. And I was going to say that other topic. Charlie's a great guy. I don't know Charlie well. He joined the board a couple of months ago. But to your point, he flies Warbirds, air show guy. I like Warbirds. That's why I'm at the conference right now. And so I think, you know, I'm actually happy that guys like Charlie are on there because
who's a real unicorn, right? Yeah. I mean, he can speak to the business stuff and he can speak to the guy flying the B-17 or the Corsair.
Yep. Exactly. No, he's cool. I've had dinners with him, and I love the conversations. He's had some amazing experiences, and NetJets is an amazing organization as well. So, you know, and frankly, I think one thing I'd like to have seen AOPA do, and I think AOPA will, there's a whole agenda there that they're driving, is, you know, have AOPA become even more relevant for young folks who want to make aviation a career, whether that's airlines or fractional entities like NetJets and FlexJets, or whether it's aerial firefighting or medevac and all these things you can do in aviation. And AOPA to date has not played a big role in helping people navigate that part of general aviation. And I personally believe there's a huge opportunity for AOPA to do that. And I would expect it will.
You were the first person who ever told me about, and I have amplified this out on every platform that I use, including the air show microphone. AOPA has a full, ready to go, in the box, high school curriculum that is ready to launch. And it's available now. High schools. I've told this to not only the superintendents that I've meet with when they come out to the air shows, but literally anyone that'll listen about this. Because my belief, Darren, and I know that a lot of people here share this with me, air shows and what we talk about in Warbirds, it's the first touch point for so many people to look up. And if we look at all of the massive problems that are facing humanity, whether it's the degree differences that we see in our temperature from the last 100 years, whether it's the fact that the sun, they think, might be running out of energy. How they do that, I don't know. But they're saying about 1 billion years is what we've got left. But if you look at that, if you look at that timeline and the fact that any minute we could have a giant meteor hit us, and if you look at all of the science that has been collected, the one thread in all of that that is going to save humanity is if people look up and they dream much larger than what we're dreaming right now and what we're taught. We need that next generation to say, you know what, I want to be the next explorer. I not only want to go to Mars, I want to find this other planet that may be out there. And the only way to do that, the first touch point, is usually something at an air show, is usually something dealing with aviation that encourages us to look up. And you guys are at the forefront of this.
I think so, yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned the high school program, because it's one of the things that I think is the least known about, but one of the most powerful things that AOPA does, and it's 100% donor funded. It would not exist were it not for generous people who give AOPA money to do it. And there's 32,000 kids in that program today as we sit here having this conversation, 1,500 schools, all 50 states. So, you know, that's an example of a number of things AOPA does. And I think exactly as you said, the more we can get young people into aviation, even just exposed, and even if they don't become aviators in whatever form that is, whether it's a pilot, a mechanic, a air traffic controller in some form, the fact that they understand what aviation is and all the inspiration you just mentioned, I think is bodes well for us as a community, because you've put people into that community around each of us that at least have an appreciation for what airplanes are. Because for most, it's a mystery. They don't really understand what this is all about. And I think the high school program provides them that first view, and it's totally free. And the teachers don't have to be engineers. We teach people who are high school, math teachers, but also English teachers, you know, religious studies, you know, pick your favorite topic. AOPA supports them in that. So, I think it is important, much like what EAA does with Young Eagles. I mean, these are perfect complements. Young Eagles gives them that that first inspiration of flight. The high school program gives them a path to turn that inspiration into something tangible that then sets them up to go off and get a rating if they want or become a mechanic. We need trade school programs like mechanics. We're woefully short of mechanics. And so that's another area that, that AOPA has been leaning into is how do we fix that? So, yeah, there's so much that's needed, and I think AOPA is an important organization to do that.
Well, I hope that maybe this is an expansion opportunity for them. I hope that they can look at this and say, you know what, maybe we do need someone on the board that looks like the young lady who's running a flight school and out of a 150 and has a leaseback 172. We need these people to be represented in the organization that is representing everyone involved in aircraft ownership in the United States. I hope that as you find this next person, as they've said that they're going to engage you to do, that maybe this is the crack of light there in this new organization that we're going to see unfold with AOPA. But at any rate,
yeah,
it is such a critical organization to have strong and vibrant in the Washington area. Part of me hopes that we would have a Charlton Heston type show up. I remember the shotgun. Was it a long gun over his head? Out of my cold, dead hands. I mean, I feel like we're kind of at that point here in general aviation where we need someone who can really stand up and deliver this message to Capitol Hill, because our freedoms to fly, I feel, have never been more threatened.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think you said it well. I don't know if I can say it any better. I think it's critical that there's a person in that role that can do that, and that the organization is set free to go do what it can do. Because AOPA has done a lot. It can do a lot more.
Darren Pleasant, thanks for sitting down with us.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
We'll be back with more here on Warbird Radio for the 2026 season right after this. Welcome back to Warbird Radio. This is a season, or year, I should say, 17. This is the fourth episode. My thanks again to Darren Pleasance with AOPA for coming on. We're joined now by the guy who knows more about, really, the Warbird business than anybody I've ever met, a guy that's been in the business of Warbirds, for a very long time, Mark Clark from Courtesy Aircraft, and the lovely Darcy, who is here with us now.
Darcy's the one that does all the work.
Well, Darcy is really special because the reason I wanted to have you on, Darcy, is because you're part of the 20 under 40 class of 2026.
That's right.
And you got in right under the wire. Yeah. We all sing happy birthday, and the whole restaurant was singing. I don't know if you could hear it last night, but everybody looked around.
It was really cool. It was really cool.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank
and we're glad that you're part of that class. But you got into this, and Mark, I'm just going to let her steal the show for
just a few minutes here.
But talk about your journey into aviation, because I don't think a lot of people realize that you are an aviator in your own right. And share a little bit about that.
Well, I come from a family of aviators. My grandfather was a pilot in World War II, and he flew a Bristol Bow fighter in Italy. And, I grew up hearing war stories from him, and he had three kids, and his youngest son also became a pilot, and he retired a few years ago from Delta Airlines. So I grew up a lot flying with my Uncle Mark and my grandfather. He owned a Baron and a couple of airplanes, Cubs, that type of thing. So I knew at a pretty young age that I wanted to learn how to fly. So when I was in high school, I picked up a job as a line girl. And
that's a tough job to have.
It was. Yeah. A lot of, scrubbing the bellies of airplanes, again, oil running down my, arms and fueling airplanes, cutting grass. So I started flying then and got my license in high school. And then I went to Lewis University outside of Chicago. It's got a great FAA program. So I got a degree in aviation administration there, and also got my instrument rating my freshman year. So, and then, after I graduated, I was looking for a job. My ex-husband at the time, he was an airline pilot, and kind of decided I didn't really want that life. I want to be home a bit more. And so I just got on the hunt. And that's how Mark Clark and I met. He interviewed me for Courtesy Aircraft to be their marketing director. I was 22 or 23. And so I've been working with him for you know, quite some time now. And since then, I've probably sold 120, 130 airplanes with him. And
Curtis is a small company. It's not a big company.
No. We're very, and very small.
She might be the marketing person, but not afraid of selling an airplane here and there.
Yeah, she does a great job.
Do you all have sales meetings, Mark? Is it like a car dealership where the guy walks in and says, if you don't feel like selling anything today, you know,
we don't say... Not feel like selling today. Yeah. We always want to sell something.
Salesman of the month gets a set of steak knives. How does that work in the Warbird business? What is it like day to day, Curtis?
We communicate. Darcy lives remotely, a different town than I do, but today you can communicate very easily with the email, phone calls, texting, whatever. And we've worked together long enough that we know how each other thinks about things, and we react the same. You know, in 85% of the situations. And so it works very well back and forth. Darcy is a very creative person and takes care of our website, does all of our advertising we've got here at NWOC, makes our brochures and everything. So she's got a lot of hats to wear at Courtesy Aircraft. So
let's talk about the Howard 500 that's up for sale right now. This is a pretty cool airplane. When you put an airplane like that on the internet, you know the numbers that you're seeing on your website. Is it just a flood of traffic when something new and exciting comes out like that?
Yeah. we've had quite a jump, and we also did a press release recently, so we've definitely got a lot of hits, different publications.
Yeah, and we've just been since I've been here at NWOC, I've been communicating with one of the owner's representatives, and they've been digging back through the archives, and they've come up with some very interesting historical stuff that we will be putting out to the public to tell the background of this airplane. And, you know, this airplane came out in the early 60s, before the days of the Learjets and the Falcon jets and the Hawkers and all of that stuff. So, I mean, this airplane at about 180 gallons an hour will true out over 300 knots in pressure. It's pressurized. It's an awesome Kurt Brown, the astronaut, has been flying the airplane. I had a long talk with Kurt yesterday to really fill me in on some of the background information, so we can pass that information on to potential buyers. And it's an awesome airplane. It's a big airplane. I mean, it takes some management. It takes some skills, piloting skills, maintenance skills. But there's only two of them left flying out of 30 some that they built, and it was the ultimate corporate airplane back in the early 60s.
Yeah. Well, it's a gorgeous machine, too. But you've got a lot of inventory, and if you're not familiar with Courtesy, just go look at their website, which is courtesyaircraft.com.
That's it.
Easy to find. Why use a broker? And I'll let either of you answer that question. Why should you use a broker when you're selling one of
these
things?
Well, I think we can bring a lot to the table. You know, buying and selling any expensive device, asset, can be pretty emotional, and especially with the Warbirds, the history of the airplanes, people get very attached to the airplanes. And, you know, when it comes down to it, we're all really caretakers for these airplanes, whether, you know, they're airplanes or vintage cars or whatever. And, you know, we want to keep them in good shape. We want to be able to pass them on to the next people. So to have that knowledge and be able to understand why somebody wants to sell their airplane. Well, I've had the airplane for 5 years. It's a bucket list item. I've always wanted to fly a Mustang, or I wanted to get checked out in a tail dragger. I want to go to air shows. You know, everybody has a certain thing they want to do. And, you know, we find out if they're really qualified to do that. If they're not really qualified, then we can say, you know, you're not quite ready for a fighter. You should have a T-6. Fly a T-6 a couple years, and, you know, then you're going to be ready. You know, we want to care for these airplanes, so we're just not putting somebody just in there, get in and go fly just because your check cleared. It's more important than that to us.
I got it. So you don't recommend Facebook Marketplace to sell your
We don't use that too much.
B-17.
No. We like to really be able to communicate and know our customers. And
there you go. You've sold a few of those over the years, B-17s.
Yeah.
No. Have you sold one, Darcy? Have you? No. Not yet. Not yet.
We're working there.
How many have you sold, Mark?
Just one B-17, but I've sold lots of Mustangs, and I had Darcy and the other girl in the office go through our records back to 1990. We have good computerized records after that time frame, and not so complete before that. But we added up all of the airplanes made by North American: T-6, Mustang, B-25, F-86,
T-28s.
And in that 1990 to about a year and a half ago, we had sold over 640 transactions of North American built airplanes.
Just North American.
Yeah, mm-hmm. just North Americans. It's and I, wow. I got those numbers. I go, whoa. You know, and you sell, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 a year, but of all of these different types. So that was an eye-opener for us. I hadn't even looked at it that way.
What do you think the most undervalued airplane is right now? Is there a deal to be had in warbirds at the moment?
I don't know. You know, there's so many different types of warbirds. And, you know, a guy that's, you know, wants to buy an L-bird is probably not going to buy a Mustang right up front. So, you know, I think probably in the L-birds are probably good buys right now. They're easy to own. They're easy to manage. They're economical to operate. But they're kind of, you know, they're kind of the beginning of the going down the path on warbirds. And I always say that, you know, if you want to fly a fighter, you've got to fly a T-6. And I tell people the T-6 is really the gateway drug to fighters. So, and the T-6 is a fantastic airplane by itself.
Yeah.
Super historical and fun to fly and round engine and, you know, all that stuff.
What do you think, Darcy? You got a prediction on the market as far as the undervalued airplane this year that we're going to be going into? Mm. The one to pick up quick?
You know, I've kind of noticed more of a trend going upwards. I feel like there, you know, probably 5 or 10 years ago, even maybe the T-28 markets, it went down a little bit, and then we saw T-34s kind of go up quite a bit. A lot of the guys kind of went down to that airplane, not down, but just more economical and easy to fly. All the shops can work on it, you know, that radial engine and all that. So I've seen that, but it seems lately the markets, it's people are kind of holding on to airplanes a bit more, and so I think the prices are kind of going up a bit overall. Don't you agree, Mark?
Yeah. I mean, there's a little less active inventory these days, and of course, you know, law of supply and demand, less inventory, the higher the prices. But airplanes, and I've been doing it for a long time, 45 years probably, but over those years, the prices generally continue on an upward trend. And I always tell people, if you have a warbird and you take good care of it, you have it well maintained, and you do a nice job of flying it, you should probably be able to own the airplane for a couple of years, sell it, at least get your purchase price back, maybe get some extra money to take care of what the maintenance costs and stuff. And somebody will say, well, I thought it'd appreciate more than that. Well, you know, you've flown it 150 hours or 200 hours in 5 years, and you've gone to air shows, you've met a lot of great people. I mean, there's some value just to being able to use the airplane and share the history. To me, that's a tremendous value, but you can't put a dollar sign on that.
I remember I had a half share in a 172 just a few years ago. Sold the airplane for roughly what we paid for it. That same airplane, the very next year, sold for $118,000+. I think we had sold it for like 40 or something. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the market jump. And I thought, what has happened to this market? Did we see an explosion after COVID, or was it just crazy with these lighter airplanes? Because the warbirds, they've not remained flat. There has been a slight increase.
Slight upward.
But well, nothing like that I've seen.
Well, you know, you look at the new GA airplanes that are being produced, you know, 172s are $700,000. Yeah. You know, Cirrus, well over $1 million for the more powerful Cirruses with all the equipment and stuff. You know, and, you know, for that kind of money, you can buy a lot of used airplanes. So some people don't, you know, they don't want to spend $1 million. They'll spend $700,000, yeah, you know, for a used one.
And the reason I bring this up is because obviously that we've talked a lot about 20 under 40 at this NWAC. We've got to get these younger folks interested in this. And, you know, when you see these kinds of numbers, you start realizing that if you're going to build time in a tailwheel airplane, your options are becoming more and more limited. I saw an L2. I used to have an L2 for sale, you know, $60,000-$70,000. Which is, in today's money, not a lot of money for an airplane, and that's still a big number, though.
Well, but, you know, if you look at the prices of new cars, I mean, you cannot buy a full-size SUV for less than about $75,000.
Yeah,
$75,000 will buy you a pretty darn nice L-bird, a variety of airplanes like that, and, you know, some home-built airplanes. And so if somebody wants to go flying, you know, you're not, the money may seem like a lot, you know, a lot of money, but compared to some of the other things out there, cars and boats and things, they're all.
Yeah, it's still less than a bass boat, is what I always tell people. You don't have to have a truck and trailer. You don't have to, you can literally stick this thing in a hangar, and if you don't mind driving, you can usually find a pretty good deal in a hangar.
Yeah,
Well, I think it's great. So the market's doing well. If you're someone that is looking to invest in an airplane right now, this is still a good time to do it. Is what you're saying?
Oh, it's an excellent time, and and especially things like NWAC, meet all of the people. I mean, we have customers from all around the world, and just some interesting stories. Just the customers, what they do to be involved, and the businesses they've had. And I mean, I could just go down this list of the customers, and you think, wow, I didn't know somebody had a business like that. And what they do is just kind of obscure things that all go together and make the world work.
All right. I want to give up. You got to give up one secret in the last few seconds. Darcy, what is Mark's secret close? Does he have a secret close?
Oh.
Does he have something that just, like, they're on the fence? They're on the fence. He can't say, let me go get my manager. What's the secret, Darcy? Is there a tell?
I might have to plead the fifth with this one.
Oh, gosh.
We can't give away all our secrets
Rick
now.
Rick Siegfried's going to be disappointed in me if I don't get this out of you. Yeah, you know.
No, I just say, you know, I'll call Darcy and see if it's okay if I sell the airplane. And, you know, they've got to be friends with Darcy, and then I can sell it to them.
You can't fly a Monet. I thought it'd be something good like that. I'm a little disappointed, Mark, but that's all right. We'll have you back.
We're not giving away all the secrets, man.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. State of the Warbird market is good, and it's always a great day at Courtesy Aircraft to buy something.
Well, you could sell. We sell them. Yeah. You know, we got to have one to sell if we're going to. Yeah, somebody's going to buy one. So, you know, we've had a lot of repeat business, which is fantastic. So,
fun.
All right. Well, Darcy and Mark, thanks for sitting down with us on Warbird Radio. It's always a pleasure to have you both on.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more episodes as this season for 2026 rolls on and continues. A lot of excitement here on the floor at NWAC. If you've not already made plans to attend in 2027, start marking these dates off on the calendar, because I guarantee you, you're going to want to be here. So long for now.
This is Warbird Radio.
Quality proteins aren't just for special occasions. With Omaha Steaks, you get mouth-watering proteins delivered right to your door, individually packaged and portioned, so a great dinner is just minutes away. From Taco Tuesday to a weekend feast, taste the Omaha Steaks difference. Start getting flavorful proteins delivered today. Visit omahasteaks.com and get $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code AUDIO. Terms apply. See site for details.